Good, very cold Wednesday, right? Good, very cold Wednesday afternoon. It's the 17th of June, 2026. We keep getting more closer to 2050. Actually, for since we are in 2026 and the half of 50 is 25. So that was last year. Last year was we were in the middle. We're basically at the center between 2000 and 2050. Now we are more closer to 2050 than we are to 2000, and we'll keep getting away. That's how time works. Good afternoon and welcome to A Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here to keep you company on Eagle FM, your favorite radio station. From 4 to 6 is, of course, your favorite duo with your Drive Time Show. Favorite radio station, favorite duo, favorite Drive Time Show. Man, you have a lot of favorites. And today we come bearing, okay, we never come here bearing good news. We always just have one interesting topic after another. And interesting is a political way of putting it. I'm like politically correct way of putting it. Now, let me clear the air before Dwight storms in here. Not clear the air, just point out what, what I actually like to think will contribute to Africa's complete independence. Because we can all agree that we have a political, okay, who are we kidding? We don't have any independence, not in a way that it should be. Political, and now to have complete political independence, you need complete economic independence. Because you can't have a complete political independence without having at least some degree of economic independence. Because, to keep things running, you need money. And that money comes from economic activities. Now, if your definition of economic activity means shipping everything in a raw form, then congratulations, you're an idiot. Because the very simple way of looking at it you can't have a political independence without having economic independence. Because if you don't have a hold of your economy, it will always be, basically someone will always be running that economy. That's basically the case in Africa. I'm saying that because we are heavily reliant on the extractive industry. And some of the biggest players, if not most of all the players in this industry, are foreign multinationals coming from Europe, North America, China, Russia. They're all over the place. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't interact with other, with other economies. Basically, that's how economies work. But it's who is running the show. Who is running the show? And at this point, if you ask me, it's barely us. It's barely us. Now, I'm pointing that out not to criticize. Okay, maybe low-key to criticize. But the point is so we can have a discussion on how can we get to the point where we ourselves are running the show. Now, why am I starting with this? Because I'm about to point at the elephant in the room. One thing that I have discovered, and anyone that knows history understands that to keep a hold of your economy, you need an army to protect that economy. Any country on this planet that is in charge of its economy has an army to protect that economy. And we would be very naive as Africans to think that as a continent that has all kinds of natural resources, that not having an army is a brilliant idea. That is like, think of it this way. It's like one of the Ludwigsdorf boys or one of the Kleiner Kuppe boys going to build a fancy house somewhere in the informal settlement and not put a fence around it. What do you think is going to happen? First of all, your things will just start disappearing one by one. Why? Because you don't have the right security in place. Now, Africa, you know, Africa does not have an army in place to protect its large quantity of natural resources. But for some reasons, we think that the people from countries that love these natural resources, that whose industries basically would collapse without these natural resources, will just be nice enough not to come and steal it. Really? You're stealing money from your own taxpayers. You think that someone who, you think that someone is not going to come and do the same to your natural resources? Really? That's what we're going with? I can't go with that. Now, the reason why I laid the foundation of a military to back up your economic activities as the only way to have political independence, or basically independence overall, is because today we are going to talk about the Somalia Declaration coming out of the African Union's 39th ordinary session, whatever it, words that comes after that. That was held this year. They have an annual, they hold these discussions annually. And they did produce a lot of declarations and, commitments and all those things. But today we are going to look at a Somalia Declaration. That Somalia Declaration has nothing to do with piracy. It's just a... should have said that much sooner.
So we're starting with the punchlines already, Hamoud. It's okay, first 10 minutes. Okay, you are exonerated, colleague.
Thank you.
That early, we start with punchlines that early.
Now,
I would feel for a country to know that the only thing that the rest of Africa knows them for is piracy. Or let's rather say career changes that literally don't speak good to global shipping. Moving from farmers or fishermen to piracy.
Well, I think piracy is in a way fishing, just not for fish. Look, he started it. Now, so for me, I think the thing is independence. This is independence in reference to you calling your own shots in your own house. Not independence as in us rallying together and start singing a bunch of songs. This is independence in a literal sense of the word independence. How can we pull this off? Now, if you ask me, actually all you have to do is say, you don't have to ask me, all you have to do is pick a history book. Now.
Not piracy.
No. Look, the thing is, I like reading a bunch of books about history and watching a bunch of documentaries about history. And one thing that all empires have in common was the first thing they did was they secured a strong military.
Well, it was also based on something else, Hamoud.
Every empire has always had a strong military because that's how you, first of all, and interesting enough from what I've seen from all the documentaries and books about different empires that I've seen was an empire will first build a military for defensive purposes. And then that military has a tendency, and in all scenarios, the military had a tendency of basically the country itself had a tendency of moving from a defensive one to an offensive one.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, the point I made earlier before you came here was, I feel like as Africans, we are naive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't have a strong enough military as a continent to basically defend ourselves, let alone to defend our economic interest on the continent. And we have a lot of it.
Even though we want to establish a continental task force, or what, a military?
Oh yeah, that, and we want our own, bank and money,
own central bank
and currency.
But we are talking there, but we can't achieve economic integration. We are talking there, but we can't even fly to each other.
Dwight.
Yeah.
Put it this way: as an African politician.
Mm.
You're stealing money from your own taxpayers. What makes you think that the people...
The same taxpayers will believe you.
No, it's not the believing part.
What makes you... Okay, yeah, they're still believing you because they're voting for you.
Oh, yeah. Basically, they are. We have got to be serious.
Yeah, you got to love political economy, né?
I know, right? The thing is, Africa has a lot of natural resources that a lot of industries outside of Africa would collapse without these resources.
Yeah.
So not everyone is going to come asking nicely to have access to these resources. Some of them will just storm in and start bulldozing things. So if you ask me, well, the first thing that Africa needs is an army.
Why?
Not an offensive one, a defensive one.
Mm.
China was nice until they were dragged through 100 years of humiliation. They build an army, now no one will mess with it.
Get the best for dad this Father's Day at ShopRite. Save big on a wide range of gifts and treats he'll be sure to love, like an 8-piece Wall Home Pro Basic haircutting kit for $179.99 per set. Kalahari Hemsbok Droivors for just $36.99 per 100 grams. Or give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back, and we are still listening to, we just started, and we haven't even introduced the topic. Actually, I did introduce part of it, Somalia declaration, but it didn't actually dive in detail. Now, the reason why I'm saying that every country needs a defensive military to defend its interest is because that's the same thing that's the template I see with India. That's the template I see with Pakistan. That's the template I see, I see with Russia. That's the template I see with the US. Template I see with Europe and Israel. And what's the excellent example of why I made that point?
Yeah.
Middle Eastern countries. They outsourced security. They are paying the price.
True, but the history books are a little bit different from what we see today.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't worry, dear listeners. You guys know by now how Helmut and I, we operate. We just want to give you the context that feeds into the current foreign policy discussion or internet. Okay, Namibia wants to call it international relations. Namibia and South Africa.
Yeah.
But if you're above the equator in the northern hemisphere, they all call it foreign policy.
Yeah.
Because literally, the foreign policy scenario in many cases sounds like a discussion of how to deal with that country.
Yeah.
So it already has this us and them division. There's this imaginary sort of like apprehensiveness in terms of how do you approach foreigners from there. That country's people.
Actually, I think foreign affairs is a preferred term, not international relations.
Because Helmut, you try and define to me in a very specific scenario, international relations. That means, this basically means you walking on that pavement. You there in public. That's what international relations means. But foreign affairs literally speaks to foreign relations.
Affairs that are outside your borders. Yes. Basically.
But international relations means me at the UN, which is a global, which is a public forum, me at the AU, me at the Italy AU conference, which is also a little bit weird because it's an individual country dealing with the whole continent. So, me at SADC, me at the non-aligned movement, countries for non-aligned movement. But it just, the labeling sometimes is just weird.
Yeah.
Well, the point I wanted to make.
Yeah.
So the point that you highlighted was one based upon when you look back in history, in terms of the discussions around, powerful countries or empires back then, was they all had military might.
Yeah.
Which is a good fact to start from. But when you even go into that fact to ask them, how did they become military powerhouses, you realize it's because their political machinations went and said, You know what? Let's become asset forfeiture countries.
So in other words, let's build an army so that when we steal, the people we are stealing stuff from cannot come and steal it back.
Yeah, we go there. We go and steal there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put up a flag to say that's how far our border extended.
Yeah.
And then you keep doing the same.
Never mind that we had to cross the ocean.
Exactly. So that technically is what the empires of human history have done.
Mm-hmm.
We go there and we basically imagine a country like a cancer. And then it just keeps extending its borders.
Yeah. That's how empires even, I mean, collapse. Most, if not all of them,
because
collapse.
They
overexpand.
They grow too big. The armies are too small. Political backstabbing becomes the order of the day in the capital.
Yeah.
Because obviously, and that's a lovely, the beauty of Sun Tzu's book, The Art of War. The further you are from your concentration, your political power,
yeah,
which is the cities, basically. The further you are from it as a general, your seat of governance,
yeah,
you have no control over what backstabbing, treason, betrayals take place here in your capital. You are very, it's the same thing that happened with Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was a general.
Yeah.
Homeboy had to turn back from there, from the battlefield, come back to deal with political
issues.
Yeah. Because obviously the idea of what Namibians look at today, if Namibians look at human history in that scenario and trying to understand where, you know, in the African discussion, like what the Pan-Africanists are calling for, open up the borders.
Yeah.
And then you hear the joke that some journalists on a WhatsApp group for journalists shared apparently that the Zimbabwean president Emmerson Mnangagwa literally said apparently, because the other journalists were asking, is this true? Is this fact? Did it appear in any media platform in Zimbabwe?
Yeah.
Apparently, it was stated, I say apparently, that Mnangagwa apparently said that the same way that Zimbabweans found themselves in South Africa, mm-hmm, who now want to be repatriated out of South Africa, they should walk back. So as they walked there,
mm-hmm,
they must walk back to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe won't pay money for them. Yeah, I know. But
a stingy men's association, not shocked.
But when you look at the Pan-African discussion.
If that is true,
yeah,
you know what?
It's all obviously the joke of the day.
Mm, definitely
or joke of the week. But it's also a harsh reality that speaks towards the scenario in terms of how you see immigration policy also today. Now, why I talk about this is primarily that when you look at empires aimed to basically they aimed to make something homogenous. They didn't want, yes, there was diversity. For example, if you look at Genghis Khan.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Genghis. Yeah, Genghis Khan. When he became that massive ruler from Mongolia here to somewhere here in the Middle East, here just below Russia, the Caucasus, because you find people with Mongolian roots
features
all the way up until Finland and up all the way up until here, Eastern Europe. Mm. That's how far the Mongols basically conquered. So when you look at that discussion, Genghis Khan allowed diversity as long as you pay tax.
That's it.
He allowed you to practice your religion as long as you pay tax. He allowed you to maintain your social orders, your ruling class, your elites in your society,
Just fall in line.
Just pay tax.
I mean, isn't that the case for basically every empire? They allowed you to keep your seat if you were in line with their foreign policy.
The same with the Romans, true.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Greeks that much because the Greeks were before the Romans, but the most used template in modern day scenarios is many of the Western academics go back to they have got this fantasy of Roman society because law comes from the Romans.
Yeah.
Although much of the mathematics comes from and the philosophy comes from the Greeks, they use the Greeks. They will always say,
"There's always the Greeks." But the thing is, if you look at this is actually one of the most painful thing about much of science and mathematics.
Yeah.
A lot of equations and basically formulas and forces and all those things, a lot of these guys are, you know, if you just look deeper into the history of this, you know, mathematical equations and discoveries, much of those things were discovered by scholars in India 3,000 years before someone came and basically stamped their name on it. And now it's a Fibonacci sequence. It's not.
Yeah, because everybody, okay, the actual scientists within mathematics will tell you it gets back to the Indians.
Yeah.
Now, what you're basically describing is the narrative and the particular which is narrative obviously also falls very closely into propaganda, historical propaganda, which is also something I'm technically also describing. So when you get into the empires discussion, you go look at why did these empires exist and, you know, some of the roots for them. So let's get into the most obvious empire that even Namibia was under. The British Empire. The British Empire scenario was based on extraction.
Is there an empire that's not based on that?
Well, if you had to look at Genghis Khan, the Mongolian Empire, there's a lot of information that we are not told of about basically governance is there, but you don't know how it translated into the vast territory that he covered. Yeah. Even with Alexander the Great. Because how is Cleopatra like 1/5 Greek, and she becomes pharaoh of Egypt.
Yeah.
You know? That she's the great granddaughter of one of Alexander the Great's Greek generals. So how do you describe scenarios like this? And then the other scenario was the military strategy that Sun Tzu explains, and the political slash military strategy that that Machiavelli explains in The Prince, because Machiavelli is a lot closer this way than Sun Tzu is on the other side of before Jesus is born.
Yeah.
So with Sun Tzu, you're just being explained. Look at the scenario in terms of when you are at war. The threats that you suffer when you are at war, politically and militarily, and then environmentally, which is the other, the three dimensions.
Yeah.
When you come to Machiavelli assumes a template that there's a specific situation. In Machiavelli's The Prince, you have to assume that the leadership of government is a feudal system. And you have to assume that this leadership is inherited from generation to generation. There is no democratic political process of voting, establishing, selecting who to be the next leader. No. You have to assume this is a process of inheritance, and this is a process of a said particular political system or economic system that exists is feudal. Remember, the feudal system in medieval parts of the world, which includes Japan, which includes China, which includes Europe, which even includes South America to an extent, because it was civilizations before what you see today in South America, is that all these systems were based upon a system of establishing a ruling class, and then you've got other societal formations below that basically serve the ruling class.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a similar template that you'll see across the world, except for in Africa, since literature is a problem, and sharing that literature and knowledge and between us Africans also is problematic because the Europeans know about each other. I, as Dwight said here, knowing about world stuff, when you come into an African context, you don't even know where to begin. You rely on people actually doing exploratory work. So, the known empires that you look at, governance was based on a feudal system. A feudal system happened mostly based upon a scenario where there's an established elite and all means of production are controlled and operated by these guys. Then here's the next scenario that happens. So the British Empire comes along. Obviously, the French Empire tries under Napoleon, because Napoleon Bonaparte technically usurped power, governance. They established a republic. He comes in, he says, you know what, it's a coup d'etat, you sure? you know, I'm a general, so we do We do what we do best. We work for the army. And then the Napoleonic Wars happen. The British, on the other side, had already established themselves. The British had gone to war against the Dutch. They've gone to war against the Spanish. They were at war against the French for Canada, which was the French Indian War. Mm-hmm. And then the French gave them a favor back with the American Revolution. Do you know what the French did?
American Revolution?
In the American Revolution.
How did they participate in that?
Do you know what they did? Not how. Do you know what they were at a battle? Do you know what they did to the British?
They said je ne sais quoi and surrendered?
No. Yeah. Look, they surrendered in the French Indian War. And then 5 years later, the American Revolution breaks out. So what happens then? The same guys that were part of the British forces that were fighting against the French in Canada, which was George Washington and co.
Incorporated.
The French then said, okay, so since you want independence, we will give you certain supplies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then the last crucial final battle that the British, what's the British general, the guy that died on the battlefield? What was the guy's name, Tochman? But he was like a former colleague of Washington. Because remember Washington, in the British army at that stage, ne, you had to come from elite.
Yeah.
There was no meritocracy in the British army and in the British navy. You bought your position. Let me say it again, Helmut. You bought your position. It was not based on meritocracy. It
wasn't... Well, the entire government was based on God gave us the right to rule.
Yeah, which is still I think it's almost a 700-year-old thing.
Uh-huh.
A 500-year-old thing since Cromwell.
God gave us this. It's just me and my family, you know. The rest of you can just stay out there.
No, I'm not talking about the king. I'm talking about the elites below the monarchy. You buy your position.
The nobleman.
Yeah, you buy your position in the army and in the navy. It's the Americans and the French that came up with this thing of go to a military school, learn strategy, learn this, learn that, do this, do that.
Not I was born in that family.
Not
therefore.
I am showing up here with, you saw, here's my swipe card. It's a platinum visa card. You saw. I'll swipe for my role in to be a general. It's not that. It's not even a Museveni in go. A Museveni corporation. Not incorporated. Incorporated means other. Museveni and co.
Was that in 2020, 2019, 2021? But there's an American primary school kid. I think she was a grade 4 or 5. Just in early primary.
Mm.
Where she did, I think it was just a part of her homework, but it just went mainstream, where she looked at all American presidents and found out that they're all related except for one.
Oh, in terms of like lineage?
Yeah, lineage.
Yeah, I think it was the... I think it's Obama that she's talking about.
Who's not related?
Yeah.
No, Obama is part of the lineage.
Oh, no, I found... Yeah, Obama's mother is...
Obama is part of the lineage.
But Obama's dad is also here in an African context. He's also
Kenya, somewhere there.
He's also a highly politically linked person, even though he was an academic, Obama's father.
Yeah.
He was an academic, but his linkages in Kenya locally.
Yeah.
So Obama's mother.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought when I came, when I came across that news. I was like, I mean, it definitely got to be Obama. Then I checked that. It wasn't him. I'm like,
so who was it?
Was
it Eisenhower?
Not Eisenhower. Hang on a second. Did this case have by any chance ever, who is this guy?
Or was it Truman?
Except for, is it, Martin who? Martin, Van something.
Oh, the guy with the Dutch the guy with the Dutch surname, the US president with the Dutch surname.
Mm-hmm.
Cause he is, he is pretty.
Yeah, same. The one
with the Dutch surname.
Yeah.
Definitely. Cause I think he was immediately after Washington. Or after Thomas Jefferson?
But I don't get these names. I'm
Van Buren. Martin Van Buren.
That's Buren?
Van Buren. Well, technically, if you have to, you know, be actually, you know,
Germanic in pronunciation, Hamoud. It's Van Buren.
Well, in Africa, it's Van Buren. Now,
no. Then just say it like I say it in my Afrikaans dialect, Van Buren. It's beer.
Yeah. The dude looks angry. But the thing is...
No, he looks happy. It's Andrew Jackson that looks angry. Andrew Jackson was actually the known cranky one in history.
Yeah.
Do you know that he had a duel? Did he have a duel? Was it he that went to the duel as an old man?
Seriously? Now, look.
He had a short temper, apparently. The guy didn't lie. He didn't take offense.
Let's just bring this train back to Somalia.
Yeah.
You know, to Somalia and the African Union. The reason why I started off on that foundation of why, from my point of view, why a country needs a strong military if it really wants to be as independent as both politically and economically, because you have to understand that military presence of countries all around the world, including the British then and the US now, they were there not for anything else. Anything else that they were there for, it was just a farce. Mm. The whole reason they were there is to protect their foreign interest outside their borders. Mm. And that's exactly why the US has 800 plus military base scattered all across the planet right now.
Yeah.
They're always there to protect the interest of, to protect the interest, their interest in the region. And the whole democracy, as we just, recently learned, is a cover of the real reasons behind why they have significant military presence out there. But the thing about military expansions is that, you see the same thing in pretty much every empire. Mm. Militaries are expensive to maintain. Which is why I believe the only reason why the Iranian and the US government are at a negotiating table by now. Because, the US is bleeding, according to, who is this? Anthony Blinken, yeah, that really did put it in a very nice way. That, when Trump started the war in Iran, he put himself between two guardrails.
Yeah.
Guardrail number one is military supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ammunitions, because the more you use, the more you will have to replace. And replacing military hardware is not an easy thing. That's guardrail number one. Guardrail number two is the economic fallout.
Yeah.
Of the war. Now, first of all, the reason why I think that analysis is a very, basically covers the whole reason behind the negotiation. You have to understand that, they didn't negotiate with Venezuela. They just stormed in and killed a lot of, Cuban security personnel in the process. They didn't care after that.
No, they were actually talking, according to Maduro, literally, was it 26 or 27
uh-huh.
December? Mm-hmm. Maduro was having, he had a news crew in his car and uh-huh. he was at the harbor.
Uh-huh.
And Maduro, for the Venezuelan news crew, said, no, Trump and I, we even spoke last night. You know, things seem chill. He's okay.
How many times has Trump said that? We have reached an agreement with
No, not Trump. Maduro said this. And then 3 January pops along. You and I, as obviously what happened, you and I, we show up here and we're like, but we thought these people were cool.
Yeah, no, they weren't. When it comes to military negotiations, one thing that we have, you quickly learn from military strategy games, basically. You can just pick it up from there.
Yeah.
Negotiating from a weak position is the most vulnerable thing that can happen to any country. And definitely, I think that's the position that Venezuela was negotiating from. They thought,
Based on a scenario of international rule of law,
exactly that,
and on human rights discussed. Yeah, because war always the first thing it impedes is basically human rights violations. Besides just sovereign nation or national sovereignty, they thought those were the two things that they could qualify, staving off any possible attack. But
the thing is, before the whole negotiations, Trump was already breaking international law by blowing up those, the fishermen just right next to Venezuela. So that should have been sign number one that they didn't care about international law. Actually, they never cared about Indonesia. There's no, there are not a lot of countries with a strong military that have ever cared about international law. Not a lot of them.
True.
For a very long time, any country that has a strong enough military had a tendency of running around the world doing whatever they want. In the 1500s, Queen Elizabeth the First, which is, you know, that woman was very strong. You have to understand she ascended the throne after being jailed by her own father and the very same quote-unquote so-called father executing her own mom. And then he just decided to, you know, you people just, you date and break up. Henry the Eighth was like, you know, marry, when I get bored of you, execute next. But the thing is, the British at the, were those the Spanish? Yeah, it was the Spanish at the time.
That invaded.
Yeah, they were the ones that were controlling much of the high seas. And they occupied much of South America. Basically, they were running the show. They were the U.S. of the, of the 15th century, of the 16th century. So what they did was, they were basically stealing and pillaging, but then they did not allow anyone to do the exact same thing.
And the Portuguese.
It was them and the Portuguese. They stormed anywhere they want and stole anything they want. But, when the ships that were transporting what they stole were hijacked by pirates, all of a sudden that was a bad thing. They were transporting something stolen, but no one else was allowed to steal the cargo
the exact
that
same
they
thing,
stole.
Yeah, or to go and extract from the exact same source
exactly.
That they're extracting from.
No one was allowed to do that. Why? Because
I'm sorry, mining sector. I'm using your reference.
That's basically, it was mostly gold and silver.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, they had military. So they basically made the rules that applied to others, but not them.
That's most why I told you, Hamoud, if you look at the High Seas Treaty from the UN.
Yeah.
The High Seas Treaty comes from it's a European template. It's a former colonial template. Meaning, if you're not a shipbuilding country or you never were a naval power, because even the Dutch, even the Portuguese were a naval power.
Yeah, and they did what they made laws for everyone else and kept breaking those laws. Exactly what the US is doing today.
Mm.
It's just I think it's a syndrome of a country that has a strong enough military. Any country that has a dominance will do. Hang on a second. Didn't the Soviet just did the exact same thing?
Exactly.
You know, their presence in pretty much of the Middle East, including Afghanistan. Now.
And remember, that was even the Soviets.
Yeah.
Were running an imperialistic project.
Yep.
What many fans of the Soviet Union forget is that the Soviets were also oppressors.
There is not a single big power that has not been one of imperial tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a country that literally has a shared history in terms of in the two opposite. Hemispheres of this planet, is Namibia and Finland. On record, and everyone calls it the big failed military expedition of Stalin, when just before the Second World War, after they signed that thing, after Stalin and the failed painter signed the Warsaw, I'm saying the Warsaw Pact, the treaty about to split Poland up into two.
Oh, yeah, boy.
So, Stalin...
Poland has been always at the receiving end of any country's European... any European country's expansion.
Yeah, because Poland plays a part in historically, culturally, in whichever way of that part of Europe, Central Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
But, so, after that particular... It's after or before that treaty, Stalin then tells his... Red Army generals, let's look at shifting the border between Finland and the Soviet Union. And then Finland was like, nah, bruh. Helmut, do you know who's the world's most deadliest sniper up until today? Have you ever heard of the sniper?
No.
They called him the White Death. Do you know why?
Mm-mm.
He didn't use a scope.
The man a sniper?
Was, yes, the man was deadly over more than 100 meters. A sniper.
Did he have eyes of an eagle or something?
No. Well, but his eyes were adjusted because he was a farmer or like some sort of an amateur hunter. There in Europe, they allow you almost to go out with a rifle and go shoot there. The guy has got so many kills now. He still stands as the known record in history, in human history, for what he has done.
Was that a Finnish sniper?
He's a Finnish sniper.
Oh, okay.
All he did, because there was a strategic geographic choke point that the Finns, this was the only thing that saved the Finns. It was a strategic choke point, which is part of the border of Finland and Russia today as well. And all the Finns did was lie in the trees on their side of the border, cover it up, dig trenches. But before that, we take an ad break, guys.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with the full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for $450. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
Welcome back. And hang on a second. You were saying before I bring up my point.
Yeah. So Simo Haya, in terms of his nickname was the White Death, but he didn't use a scope like what you would see in any action movies about wartime and stuff like that, about snipers. And Simo Haya is literally the only known sniper in modern military history who... And he basically still walked away, because you can see he's an old photo of the man. He walked away alive. In many cases, they die gruesome deaths there on the battlefield, because you have to act alone. So Simo Haya, technically in Finnish, not independence history, but more like Finnish defense of their border, not single-handedly, obviously, but there were farmers and other, you know, their defense forces. He basically ensured to play a part in basically keeping the Red Army at bay. Now, if you had to understand the Red Army at the time, the Red Army didn't have the wonderful armaments that they had later in the Second World War, at the start of the same war, the Second World War. Plus, they also weren't as well equipped, because this was as they were trying to expand things and testing the waters, because, you know, the Poland thing was now like a sure done deal thing, and they could do their stuff. Obviously, the Soviet Union, if you understood it, it included Ukraine, it included Belarus, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, and Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Georgia, what's the other country's name? Azerbaijan, parts of Mongolia, I think, or Mongolia. Yeah, they had a Mongolia in them as well. There's still another stan that I'm missing. Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan as well. So all those countries were the Soviet Union. Now, like you said, they had an army. There is the first particular similarity. But the political system, which I alluded to, for example, which Sun Tzu said, is if you are far away from your capital, your center of political power, then weird things happen.
Chaos begin at home.
And you start seeing, you know, what's that thing that we said in Afrikaans, is as die kat weg is, then the mice is baas. If the cat is away from the house, the mouse is the homeowner.
Seriously?
Well, if I had to tell you all the Afrikaans idioms that I grew up with, and we practiced the stuff at school even, I mean, you will laugh. And even the things that your parents will even include, because my mom used to say that my dad used to say, if you ask a question in terms of, so, when are you going to do this? And you say, until Letty comes. Then you ask, now who's Letty? We don't know.
See, now, okay, you see, the military of expansion is place a lot, you know, a very heavy burden, you know, on the country's economy. Mm. I believe, and that burden, sort of like they have to channel a lot of money that they would use to you know for better service provision in the country. It yeah. have to all be channeled to that ever expanding military. So it becomes a black hole for the country's taxpayers. Now, so that explains why the Soviets. Well, it was the Soviets that sold Alaska to the US, right? And you know the
no, it wasn't the Soviets. It was the Imperial Russia.
Imperial.
Yeah, it was in the 1800s.
Imperial Russia, yeah. So, the Portuguese also had to basically say, tell the Angolans and the Mozambican, you know what, you can have your independence. Things are not looking good at home.
Yeah, but that was more based upon the Angolan army, not the Angolan army, the Portuguese army at home went and said, you know what, we're sick and tired of your politics. You politicians.
Military expansion.
So they did
channeling all the military.
So they did a Traore there in Europe.
Yeah, so.
They literally, and then they told Angola and Luanda, you guys can sort yourselves out.
You know what? You guys are good. You can just win.
Yeah, we don't care anymore.
Yeah, and then it became a power struggle now. Who is going to have it? But the thing is, the whole military reference, the reason why I brought up the whole military reference is that, you know, I'm looking at the African Union's declaration on the preservation of the sovereignty, territorial integrity, unity, and stability, stability of the Federal Republic of Somalia. I'll just skip everything and go to my favorite part.
Go there to strongly reaffirming.
Whereby declare the following. Number two. Just keep all that and go straight. Number two. The African Union here is now strongly condemning and strongly rejecting. This was in February, right?
Yeah.
Strongly condemn and strongly, this was in February where they produced this whole document that, strongly condemn and strongly condemn and reject all acts of external actors, in particular the unilateral recognition of the so-called Republic of Somaliland by Israel in the strongest terms and call for its immediate revocation. That was in February.
But I guess
this weekend, the president of Somaliland was in Israel. How did they strongly condemn go?
But do you know whose words these technically are? This technically is.
The African Union?
No.
The president of Somalia?
So South Africa. South Africa was most under the previous cabinet that Ramaphosa had when Naledi Pandu was Pandor. Naledi was Pandor. The, not Pandu.
What have gone with that?
Naledi Pandor. If you remember after COVID, 2022, 2023, there was an event, there was an incident.
At the AU.
Where the Israeli ambassador.
They had an observer status at the AU.
Yeah. Macky Sall, or was it Muzafaki, one of the two, extended observer status to Israel.
I think that was Macky Sall.
And then South Africa came and said, No. We don't, as Africa, we don't recognize Israel's existence. Now, it already shows you that there's a problem in the politicians of the day in understanding what they said yes to at a UN level.
Yeah.
Meaning, people don't have regular software updates to understand if you become president today, what your predecessor was doing.
Yeah.
So Macky Sall, as president of his own country, which is what? Senegal,
yeah.
He didn't go and change the status of Senegal to afford a observer status scenario to Israel.
He decided to offer one on AU level.
On AU level, where he didn't have that power. He didn't have that power, basically. He did something that he was not supposed to do.
Now, is this thing? The reason why I find this whole strongly condemn and reject is okay. You condemned and rejected in February, but that relationship is still ongoing. And what's interesting is what was saying. What's interesting is what was said when the when the president of Somaliland and the president of Israel met. That is actually something that was, and they also had a toast with orange juice. And
why did you have to point out the orange juice?
Well, look, Africa News pointed it out. I thought, well, if African News pointed it out, maybe I should just also point it out.
Look, African. What African News probably did was that they had the content of showing the toast. You seeing the juice instead of it being champagne. It could have also just have been what's that water that that flavored carbonated and colored water.
Let me just read it for you.
From one of the local brands here. The grapefruit one.
Grapefruit?
You don't know that brand. Oasis. They've got most their flavored waters.
The sparkling one?
Yeah. Literally the one that has got an orange juice situation. Or the grapefruit one. Wait, that I also like.
That's sparkling water with it. I mean, that's juice.
Basically. How did you know it's not just that, basically?
Look, when you say...
It's flavored, colored, sparkling water.
Dude, there is no picture on this article. There is no picture on this article. Orange juice is spelled out as orange juice.
Serious?
Which is why, look, I read this thing.
You know, I would have slid over the orange juice component because it's, you know, it really doesn't.
Boy, did I laugh my lungs out.
So and how do you say we had a toast with orange juice? Everybody was like, what are you guys, kindergarten kids?
Heads of states, man. Heads of state.
Look, we're sorry. Somaliland, if you're from Somaliland anywhere in Namibia, we're sorry. It's not our fault that we wrote. We didn't write orange juice.
Yeah, you know. Look, if you are in Somali, if you are, you know, Israeli, we're sorry. It was your presidents that went on to call for a toast with orange juice. But the thing is, yeah, what was said now, building up from the whole we condemn and we strongly condemn and reject back in February by the AU.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward to June, the following conversation is taking place.
Yeah.
Only one country desires to see us and recognize Somaliland, and that's the government of Israel and its people, said Somaliland President Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi to President Isaac Herzog of Israel.
Herzog, Helmut.
Herzog?
Herzog. Herzog. Oh, what? Okay.
Trump said Nambia. I'm good.
You know, it was the worst part about Trump. Then when Trump called us in his first term, you know, the Sitole countries.
Man. Anyway, now the two leaders met in Jerusalem, Israel, on Sunday and held a joint news conference that ended with a toast of orange juice in defiance of Mogadishu. The president of Somaliland is the one who said, only one country desires to see us and recognize Somaliland. And that's the government of Israel and its people. That was the president of Somaliland.
Yeah.
Now, the president of Israel's response to that was both our countries acted with courage and realism. Israel recognized Somaliland as an independent state, which has been a reality on the ground for several decades.
Who, Israel or Somaliland?
The recognition of Somaliland has been on the ground For several decades. You have to understand, I think he's saying this in reference to the fact that Somaliland broke away, was that 1990-1991 from Somalia, from Somalia. And the interesting thing is, even though they are not recognized internationally as a sovereign state, they have their own functioning government, police and currency and everything. So, but Israel last year in December became the first country 30 plus years later to recognize Somaliland as a sovereign nation.
Okay, Hamoud. Now here's where I'm going to.
Look, these two statements here that took place just the previous Sunday tells me that the strongly condemning in February didn't work.
Do you know what's the worst part?
What?
The UN doesn't even recognize Somaliland.
No, it doesn't. Because after Israel's recognition of Somaliland, late last year, there was more like a quick meeting at the AU level to discuss that exact issue.
Yeah. Now, here's the other concern. The same particular level of heads of state is concerning in terms of that they give out mixed signals. Why am I saying this?
Why are you saying that on the other side of the break?
After the ad break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
The time is 5 o'clock on the dot. If you just tuned in, welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. You were saying.
What I was saying.
Yeah.
So, the dilemma I'm going to position here, dear listeners, and to some people it might sound like a dichotomy. I'm sorry for using a word that I don't often use, but dichotomy technically means a division or contrast between two things that are mutually exclusive or completely in opposition to each other, mm-hmm. or entirely different from each other. But I'm calling this a dichotomy because I'm basing it on the actions, and I'm also calling it a dilemma because it creates problems for the AU and its unity function. You know, the union part, which tries to speak to unity. I'm citing the dilemma in the unity union thing. So what's the issue? The issue is three templates that exist currently in the world today. Firstly, in the wonderful wisdom of the AU heads of state, they decided to give a tongue lashing for Morocco over Western Sahara.
Yeah.
Western Sahara, dear listeners, has never been a country. It has never been a country since 1950 heading this way, or since 1946 heading this way, or even prior to Spanish colonialism of that part of West Africa.
Yeah.
It has never been a country on its own. The other concern has been, because technically, what many people don't know is that Morocco, even though Morocco's monarchy exists for so long, is that they were either a direct colony or they were in some state like a proxy, an African proxy here on the continent. They were still under one or other particular administrative function of Spain.
Yeah.
So, nowhere did anyone talk about Western Sahara, Western Sahara's independence, Western Sahara's particular political ambitions, self-determination, XYZ, XYZ. Because you'll have to go and dig very deep to find out that proof, that evidence. Yet, the AU heads of state stood up in opposition to Morocco's claim over Western Sahara, but Morocco's claim was a claim against Mauritania's claim over Western Sahara. And this whatever ragtag function slash whatever you want to call it militia thing there in Western Sahara, ran to the AU seeking political support. The AU announced themselves in which direction they are voicing their concern.
Yeah.
The second scenario that I'm highlighting is also AU, through action, recognizes the One China policy. This is now from a global international...
So you're talking about the recognition of Taiwan as part of mainland China.
Exactly. They recognize the One China policy. The United States has also recognized the One China policy. The whole of Europe recognized the One China policy when China came into the UN in the 80s with, what's the guy's name? The Chinese premier, the Chinese president that is known as the guy that opened up China to its developmental pathway that we've now seen the proceeds happening. What's the guy's name? Deng Xiaoping.
No, you know, what I'm thinking about right now is
the
point in contradiction of point of views and the recognition of what a region, or especially when it comes to disputed territories.
Yeah.
On their recognition, of a statehood.
Yeah,
that is an interesting one. Not just recognition; it's basically how politicians, more like how it's, especially in terms of geopolitics.
You really had to send me the African news thing.
I know, orange juice.
With orange.
You're welcome.
Oh my God! I didn't doubt that it wasn't there in the Zenders, but it's just
I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that two nations leaders met and had it. Orange juice toast.
Yeah, it was very healthy. They were thinking about the
it could have been Mazoa, so congratulations, Zimbabwe. Look, the thing is...
That's a cordial, Almut. That's a cordial.
Look, I think in the world of politics, you make decision based on your, in line with your interest.
Yeah.
Not because of rationality. Because if you, because if you just think of it rationally, then you are very right. None of these things make sense. Because you can't tell, you can't tell Morocco that, Western Sahara must be given independence. It's a state on its own. Mm. And then you turn around and then come to the Horn of Africa and then tell Somalia that, Somaliland is part of your country and no one else is actually allowed to, dispute that.
Yeah.
Now you have, and that contradiction in, in choices, or more like, of deciding on which region becomes, recognized as a sovereign country and which one doesn't. That contradiction is all over from the look of things in politics. Take Europe, for example.
Yeah.
Europe is on one side, especially Western Europe. They're condemning Russia for the war in Ukraine and on one side arming Israel.
Yeah.
In the bombardment of the Palestinian disputed area and now southern Lebanon. So they hate the war that's taking place in Ukraine. But they like the one that's taking place in southern Lebanon. And you have a lot of mixed decisions. And when you look at it, you begin to realize that it all comes down to one thing, interest.
Mm.
They have a lot of vested interest in what's going on, even with, even with Israel, the US and Iran right now. They have a lot of allies and a lot of economic interest in the region. So they don't like that war.
Yes, they don't.
Yeah, so any war or basically anything, so Henry Kissinger was right. There are no permanent friends or permanent enemies in politics. The only thing that is permanent in politics is interest. So in other words, you and I can be friends today because our interests are aligned. Now, if the next day our interests are misaligned, we quickly become enemies. So, now it makes sense why the African, and thank you. I didn't think of it that way. Now, because the African Union looks at Morocco and tells Morocco, you can't have Western Sahara as part of your main country.
You can't claim.
Yeah, you can't claim.
And this is the thing, Amut. Much of the other guys, except for Eswatini and Lesotho, who are kingdoms.
Yeah.
All the other guys are supposedly elected officials. I say supposedly because I only know of Namibia and South Africa as SADC guys that Okay, maybe except for Madagascar. But yeah, much of us SADC guys, you know, because we still exercise elections year in, year out. Okay, not year in, year out, but every cycle of elections that take place.
Yeah.
But you can't prove that for much of the rest of Africa above DRC. You can't prove that. They fly Paul Biya in, your best friend, from Switzerland just to come and cast his vote, just to be there for a photo op, ne? And then homeboy flies out again. Then he flies out again, dear listeners. Then,
yeah,
when it comes to Morocco, who is a monarchy, they are a kingdom, ne? Now suddenly, all these other rest of Africa leaders, they don't want to understand things, but you've got Eswatini's king, who I really don't know how that guy still has eyes to marry for how many wives he wants. You know, Mos, what is the big argument with that guy?
I have my own argument in my head, but we'll get fired. The thing is,
I'm calling it the big argument because, first and foremost, one of the biggest claims is obviously the they were looking at in what is it, one of the Southern African publications. The guy continuously adds to his harem of wives.
How old is he?
I don't know. He's now probably in his 50s. No, he should be in his 50s. He adds to his harem, but his country is known for having one of the biggest HIV positive rates in Africa. But he adds, that was then. So, look, there's no clear linkage between what he does as king of Eswatini and the HIV rates discussion. There's no clear scientific link that anyone can show you in data analysis there.
Uh-huh.
However, for some reason, the journalists make that connection.
Yeah.
But then I'm using that connection to position it right there to say,
because listen, the risks are high, though.
Yeah, because this is in terms of setting a good example as not just as a
head of state.
Well, it's a bit difficult to call it a head of state, Helmut, because what do you call a king that inherits a role? What do you call a person that just inherits?
Blood of state.
So that's why monarch exists, Helmut. So as a monarch, you know, he doesn't have to listen to his parliament. He doesn't have to listen to his minister of health. He doesn't have to play to any particular social, national health.
Look, man, I'm just
campaigns out there.
I'm just talking biology here. 50s, in your 50s, and you have more than two wives, let alone a whole army.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. You know, a part of growing up is that, productivity of things you are able to do declines. That's where I'm going to leave it and just come back to Somalia. The rest we'll just, talk about it after. Now, look, after Israel's recognition of Somaliland as a sovereign state last year, the following were the reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where's the, yeah, just right here. The breakaway region is, that's Somaliland. Yeah, you can just skip all that. Now, on the 6th of January this year, the Israeli Foreign Minister, Gideon Saar, visited Somaliland, just 10 days after Israel's formal recognition of the self-proclaimed region as an independent state.
Mm.
The visit was strongly denounced by Somalia, calling it an unacceptable interference in internal affairs of the United Nations member state and warning that it violates the UN Charter, the African Union Founding Act, and international norms governing relations between sovereign states.
Yeah.
Now, Israel's recognition of the region last year basically led to the following reactions. The African Union Council for Political Affairs, Peace and Security said it strongly condemned it and called it a unilateral recognition, which is basically what it was. Unilateral recognition of Somaliland by Israel. Now, China's foreign ministry spokesperson Li Jian told reporters that no country should encourage or support other countries internal separatist forces for its own selfish interest. Yeah. Now, when I read that statement, the first thing that came in my head was like, okay, you know what? This is just China throwing stones in the direction of Israel. It turns out that statement that was made by the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson was is not in the exact same words, but is put differently by a think tank within Israel.
Mm.
Now, speaking to BBC, the Institute of the National, the Institute for National Security Studies, which is an Israeli think tank, said Israel requires allies in the Red Sea region for many strategic reasons. Among them, the possibility of a future campaign against Houthis in Yemen. So, in politics, there is no such thing as he did it because he was so nice. No,
He was benevolent.
It's a strategy. Whether or not it's a strategy, it's up to the two leaders to basically reach that mutual agreement for their own mutual benefit.
Obviously, two territories have the right to engage with each other.
One of them is not recognized.
Except one of them
by the UN.
Except one of them is not even a country. In terms of national registration, because Somalia still claims ownership over Somaliland.
Yep.
Even though Somaliland could prove to the world that they could be a more peaceful territory over Somalia itself.
You know why? One of the reasons why that was pointed out by the think tank, which I totally agree with. You will understand that when you look at the map and see where Somaliland is.
Yeah, it's most
strategic location.
It's literally between
to the Red Sea.
Is it between Ethiopia or between Eritrea and Somalia?
You have Eritrea one on one side.
Because Ethiopia doesn't have a coastline.
Ethiopia is landlocked.
Yeah, so it's literally it borders onto Ethiopia here, it borders onto Somalia here, and it borders onto Eritrea there.
Yeah. Yeah, and fun fact, I just,
Guess what? They were all part of Abyssinia. Somalia, Somaliland, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. They were all part of the kingdom of Abyssinia.
Look, one thing I've realized about disputed territories, or more like territories, is like every country has that region which is a touchy subject.
That region is not just a touchy subject, Hamoud. It is literally a skin rash. Itches every time.
For China, it's Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure, actually, at this point, actually for Russia, you have the Donetsk region here, Crimea.
For Russia, it was Chechnya.
It was Chechnya, but now Russia has multiple of them.
Now it's the whole Ukraine.
Pretty much. So for the U.S., it's mostly Hawaii and Guam.
Well,
it's an interesting discussion.
And American Samoa.
That.
What many people don't know is that American Samoa is supposed to be part of full-on Manu Samoa, the island of Samoa.
Yeah.
So I don't know what treaty it was, but it's split. It's literally the situation like with Haiti and Dominican Republic on the same island of Hispaniola. The island's name is Hispaniola, historically. But the French had this side of the island and the Spanish had this side of the island. And they drew a line in the sand. Literally, it's a line. It's a bunch of trees. The border between Haiti and Dominican Republic. But anyway, so when you go to in the Pacific region where the island of Samoa is, you've got the country, the kingdom known as Manu Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not a kingdom, sorry. But it's like some sort of a democratic process there. But you've got the country of Manu Samoa.
Yeah.
And then you've got the territory on the other side of the island of American Samoa. American Samoa, guess what? Speaks French. Manu Samoa speaks English. American Samoa plays football. Manu Samoa on the other side of the island plays only rugby. They don't even care if there's a soccer situation. You don't even throw a soccer ball at them. They just play rugby. Okay, I had to
Have you seen the average height of someone from Samoa?
But they're Samoans as big as you, Helmut.
You're
talking about the Samoans we see in only one sports code.
It's Samoa, and Sudanese, especially the Dinka tribe,
which are also found in Kenya.
That tribe is known to basically have the tallest people.
The people that jump?
But
that was also the people from Tanzania that were evicted from their ancestral lands because of the oil pipeline.
Those ones are...
it's the exact same people.
Those ones are Maasai.
That's Maasai.
Yeah, that's Maasai.
Yeah, so Maasai is Tanzania and...
Tanzania and Kenya.
And Dia, Kenya
that's
only.
That's Sudan.
And...
with the highest lobola price. I was looking to change my jeans, Moss. And I realized...
Why were you looking at lobola prices? The rich South Sudanese in the U.S., the South Sudanese that you find in the U.S. are all... the connected people's kids.
There are
South Sudanese in the US at universities and at schools there.
One guy, I think he's an American college student, that's said it in a very funny way. That have you ever been at a university or college and then had a roommate from a developing country that said, you know what, I'm an American. My parents moved here to escape political persecution.
Mm.
If you have a friend who said that, just understand that it was his family that caused the problems.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. There's a whole bunch of those Africans in Namibia.
It was his family that caused the problem. So then...
you know that there's a whole bunch of such Africans in Namibia.
So that ran away from political persecution. They caused and then stole all the money and ran away. Oh, man.
About the money thing, I don't know, but yeah.
Oh, come on. That's how they flew here. They flew private.
South Africans. They were South Africans in the 80s, in the 70s, 90s. You can write a menu. The Congolese in Namibia.
Yeah, let me just read one part for you.
Yeah.
Mm. You see, according to the BBC, on the subject of the whole, this also a BBC article from a BBC article. On the list of countries that criticized Israel's recognition of Somaliland last year, the following: Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Nigeria, Libya, Iran, Iraq, and Qatar. Now, I was looking at three countries here. Sudan. Sudan criticized someone. Sudan.
Hey, man. Leave. They probably want to look normal to the world, but us Africans are all going like, yeah. Bruh.
Look, if I was Israel, I would have said, dude, anyone else can criticize me, not you.
You almost said something else.
Not you.
I even thought about it. Yeah, if I was also Israel, I would have just said, just shut up. Just shut up.
Please, just shut up. Now,
you can't even, you don't even know what the word governance is. Just shut up. Sit down.
Yeah, and of all countries, Libya.
Another one, please. Whatever you do, don't just... talk. Just sit down. Just sit down.
Please, I'm begging you.
I mean, how do the worst examples of African governance get up and say something? Just, sure, you own the right somehow. Maybe you were given the mic accidentally. I don't know, the person.
Libya, Sudan, and Iraq criticized Israel.
You know, if I was that UN guy at the UN General Assembly, I would have said, please, if you know that no one knows what government you have, please don't participate in the discussion. Do you know that, Helmut, if you have a civil war, there's apparently a standard that exists by international law. If you have a civil war in your country, all countries that have bilateral relations with you should not recognize you. Your embassies should not function. You shouldn't receive any money. Nothing. You should resolve yourself.
Sort it out first.
Yeah. before they, and it's a scenario of a friend of mine that worked at the Libyan embassy at the time of what happened to Gaddafi. So, have you ever seen Libya's flag?
Yeah.
The one before and the one now. Do you know what the one now is?
Wait. There's one before, there's one now?
Yeah. Which flag do you have in your mind's eye right now?
When did they change? They changed
when Gaddafi was killed.
Oh, yeah, then this is the old one that I have in mind.
That, the one that looks like the Iraqi flag.
Yeah.
No, not the, that looks like the Egyptian, like the Egyptian flag.
Yeah.
Because they've got a similar color scheme, basically the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
The Libya, that old Libyan flag in Iraq. And Egypt, sorry.
Do you have any idea how confused it is sometimes? You know, at least I used to get. It's and the Syria, difference between...
It's Syria, it's Iraq, it's...
Ireland.
And
Ivory Coast.
Yeah, them too. But it's where the colors are.
Uh-huh.
If you know you start with green, it's Ireland. If you know you start with orange, you know it's Côte d'Ivoire. And it's not even Ivory Coast. You must use Côte d'Ivoire. Even though everybody knows they were called that name because they were exporting ivory from there. So poaching was heavy there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, digressing. Yeah. At the time of the Arab Spring in Libya, what happened there? Was it the Arab Spring? Because it all happened in 2011. Yeah, it was the Arab Spring, basically. So what happened there in Libya, the discussion was, Hamoud, that this friend of mine, when she was working still at the Libyan embassy, she had to tell the diplomats, the Libyan diplomats, you can't use that flag because no one still recognizes you by international law. No one recognizes you.
So it's everyone, at least internationally, the recognized official flag of Libya was the one that was used under Gaddafi.
No.
Was it a new one?
So when your head of state, your governance, everything is looking healthy and everything is, you know, spotless and, you know, it's got its COVID-19 shots and its polio shots and everything, there's this flag.
Mm-hmm.
So now, suddenly, your country falls into internal unrest, which looks like a civil war to everybody else in terms of the standard definition, you know, of recognizing the diagnosis and the symptoms.
Yeah.
There's a lot of killing. There's warfare. Your president dies. Your cabinet runs away. And anyone else that was in power, mm-hmm. who is no longer in power, now tries to sort of like keep a semblance of governance power intact, but it doesn't, because now it seems like your country is split into two. So what happened literally with that scenario, when your country splits into two, is that this flag identity falls away.
The one that you formally recognized.
Yeah, the one you were recognized in. And then, she explained to me, then the diplomats here apparently in Windhoek showed up with this flag, this green flag.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a green flag, a solid color, the new flag.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed up with this flag. And she explained to me, Dwight, these guys were going to cause literally international relations issue in Windhoek,
yeah.
with this flag. If they hoisted this flag here. Even though an embassy in Namibia is technically hallowed ground. It's sovereign territory in Namibia. Meaning they could do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. But under international law. So, they couldn't hoist this flag at the embassy grounds, primarily because no one recognized them. No one knew at what level was the internal conflict. Mm-hmm. No one knows what was going on. So technically, countries like Sudan and Libya technically should not even participate at UN General Assembly platforms.
Well, they were there condemning Israel.
Which shows you the dichotomy / dilemma discussion of Africa's discussion of union. Because remember, I started from the South Africa, what happened in 2022, 2023,
mm-hmm.
With that Israel observer status.
Yeah.
So now you come forward. One China policy exists. Whole of Africa recognizes it except for Lesotho. Because Lesotho is the only country in the continent that has bilateral relations with Taiwan.
Oh, yeah, that's why they...
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Which China also said they don't, Lesotho cannot enjoy zero tariff beneficiation.
Trade with China now.
Yeah.
You keep paying the tariffs.
Lesotho is also, I sometimes wonder about these small countries, which also includes us. We go and make our voices so thick and so loud, and we shout the loudest, and we condemn people left, right, and center. And then people look at, okay, so how big are you? And then they realize we're just this unmalnourished kid standing there. We actually stand in the shoes, but the shoes are like five sizes our size.
You know, before Israel, Iran, and the U.S. started bombing the heck out of each other. I think that was just in the early days of that bombardment. Military exchange. Guess which country was threatening Iran? Bahrain. I looked at that map and went like, you've got to be kidding me.
Bruh, you are literally across the street. Do you know that the guys can stand in Iran? They can stand on literally on the beach and throw stones at you.
When you look at the map in terms of landmass of the two countries, I'm looking at the map of Iran and I'm looking at Bahrain, like, eish. Commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So coming back to listeners there from the extended break. Obviously, the dichotomy, the dilemma, I'll use my marketing terminology, the problem child syndrome that exists in the world of international relations, because in many cases, the policies and the actions don't match up. So, Somaliland, in a nutshell, is not a country. Legally, it's not a country. It's a peaceful territory. That was peaceful way before and way after, immediately before the civil war that happened in Somalia, and immediately even after the civil war supposedly cooled down in the 90s and the 2000s, even in sub-Somalia. Because at one stage in the 2000s, Al-Shabaab was a pretty strong, terror element in Somalia, because Al-Shabaab was thriving in Somalia. Only Mogadishu was the only peaceful area.
The capital city.
Let me say that again. Mogadishu was the only safe place in the whole of Somalia.
It's the city government, so they had to guard it with everything.
Guess who's the other country that has the same dilemma?
Who's that?
Mali. Bamako was the only safe place. Bamako was the only safe place. Where literally the army and the police could literally keep governance under control. Now imagine, Helmut, you've got critical infrastructure like water and electricity sitting outside your capital city. If your capital city is the only place that is safe from, any invasion, how are you going to defend critical infrastructure like that? Remember, like a country like Albania, the one that we were talking about?
Yeah.
With all the standing surface water. that they use for hydroelectric power, which technically makes Albania literally the template of renewable energy production. Now, imagine if there is something like what happened with Somalia and with Mali that I just referenced. And remember, Mali's thing popped up again back in last month. Remember the guys on bicycle, on motorcycles and with the Land Cruiser buckies setting the example for the, you know, best product of the century ever. And here's the thing. It's two Islamic insurgent groups. Two. One coming from the north, one coming from the west, from the east. The Tuareg one, and then there was the Islamic, the literal, terrorist one. The one with terrorist ties. Mm-hmm. Well, both have terrorist ties. Two of them. Hamoud. And once again, only the capital of Mali is a safe place. So that means anything else outside the capital is literally the Wild West.
You know,
So, we can't deal with terror and instability on the continent. Firstly, because the one president doesn't want to poke the other president in his or her eye about their internal issues.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have the goal, because I didn't want to use the other phrase that exists in English. We have the goal, the audacity. That's the other Hixie level one. The audacity to tell Morocco crap about Western Sahara. We can't tell DRC, stop funding a proxy to fight against your own people in your own country. And we can't tell Rwanda, stop funding a proxy who's attacking people in DRC. And under, you know, if you look at it from a moral standpoint of things, you would easily side with Rwanda.
On.
Because remember the reason why M23 was created? Was to harass those who went to go and who fled across the border into DRC. It's not just the defense that they did specifically for the impacted people that live there in the east of DRC,
mm-hmm.
which since Mobutu Sese Seko's time, has been discriminated against up until even today under Tshisekedi. So even then, the African heads of state don't want to tell each other, hey, listen, my guy, respect diversity, respect heterogeneous societal structures. Look at Namibia. We've got, what was that example that one guy from the indigenous languages, that NGO, Elan, its name is Elan, where he said when they went to do an assessment, Hamid, about how many languages actually exist, because according to them, like the national registry that exists, there's like these 15 or 16 or 20 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said when they went as far north as possible, and northeast and northwest, to southeast and southwest, they found close to 50 languages in Namibia.
I think languages are going to be a lot.
Yeah.
But now, and I think that discussion will be very easy to have once we start, we first have to define what constitutes a language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, because what I keep hearing is, okay, I speak this language, which dialect, which I, and which dialect and which dialect, which is I'm just saying the language, the terminologies are not the terminology of what constitutes language and what constitutes a dialect, especially here at home. I'm not clear on that.
Yeah.
But on the whole Somalia discussion, the countries that criticized Israel, irrespective of their political situation at home, the reasons basically that behind much of the reasons behind they stated, at least most of them, behind the criticism over why that was a terrible template in terms of setting precedents for international law, was it creates an unstable environment. And this was an emergency UN Security Council session. So both the permanent and the non-permanent member was there. The US also basically stood there and well, you don't have to explain to you who they sided with. But the point is, the thing is, that creates a very, okay, that creates terrible precedents, which I get, because you don't want anyone to, you know, you don't want someone to wake up one morning and they say they, you know, and the African Union is in session. Or take, for example, you know, just a country stands up one day and they decide, you know what, I recognize Kavango region as a sovereign nation, or our most touchy subject in Namibia, Caprivi Strip, as a sovereign country. Or if you go to South Africa, for example, they will have their own issue. Every country has its own touchy subject. So, you can understand why that emergency United Nations Security Council session that was had on Israel's recognition of Somaliland. The reason behind if a country can stand up and recognize the statehood of a disputed territory, which is internationally recognized as part of the main country that is right next to, if we can do that, then any country, well, China will just stand up and recognize theirs. And then the next thing you know, you have civil wars breaking up left, right, and center.
But that was the thing, Hamoud, that in the global south we are trying to prevent.
Yeah, exactly. And the African Union, the African Union, which is something that they basically went back on to some degree, if you ask me, on the, you know, on the whole Western Sahara, you know, Western Sahara recognition, was the goal, especially just in the name of political stability in the region. We were not there when the borders were drawn during the whole Berlin conference, but for the sake of our own political stability, it's just safe to stay with the borders that were drawn during the Berlin conference. And to understand why that is a very important point, you have to ask yourself, what happened to an African country, to most African countries, when they got their independence? As soon as their oppressor, or more like their colonizers, left, they didn't have a unanimous consensus on how to run the country. More often, there was a civil war.
Yeah.
There was a dispute on how to run the country. Even the countries that did not descend into a civil war, there was a lot of political squabble on how to run the political and the economic part of that country. And
except for the British ones, which is still something, Hamoud, I'm trying to understand till this day.
The British?
The British, the former British colonies in Africa.
What I mean was... Odinga Senior and Kenyatta, you know, hated the heck out of each other, because one said, you know what, this is how the country should be run. The other said, let's do it like this. So,
now political persecution was now.
Exactly. So, the thing is, even the countries that had, that did not descend into a civil war, the leadership at a central government level, which is the highest level of government, could not agree on how to make the decisions on and which direction to take the country in terms of governance and economic decision making. But then there are those that had it worse, like Angola, who now just went right into a civil war from 1975.
And Mozambique as well.
We have Mozambique.
There was Liberia, which is actually Africa's oldest country. And it was constituted by the Americans.
Now, so...
If you want to talk about a long civil war, it's those guys. And they had repeated civil wars.
Yeah.
That's even the worst part, having repeated civil wars.
Yeah.
Liberia could have been a template, Ned, that would even have made the things that Namibia gets right, like kindergarten. I'll just stop there.
So now the issue you have here, which is a problem both on a UN and in our case on an AU level, is who do you side with in terms of political disputes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because take, for example, in the Morocco example that you gave, the entire African Union sided, except for Morocco, as you can imagine, except for Morocco, sided with, Western Sahara.
Yeah.
So to be a sovereign country. Now, the very same case arise with Somalia, and they are making a whole different decision, which raises a lot of questions now about, okay, what are we going with? Are we keeping the old borders?
But that is,
or we are redrawing the new ones.
But that's the thing that these guys are not doing, because when you read this, what is this, a declaration or a resolution? Yeah, it's a declaration. Yeah. So when you read this declaration, I mean, they try to sound strongly worded, even starting with the reaffirmation statement of the long-standing commitment of the African Union and its predecessor, the OAU, to the principle of intangibility of borders inherited. So
I like that
you are happy to inherit a decision made in 1885. Or in 1884.
Okay, let me translate that for you.
Okay.
What that means is we don't want to redraw our own borders, because we will fight for centuries before we decide which borders will be right.
Okay. So, thank you. Thank you, Helmut. Thank you. Should I call you honorable?
No, wait for me to be in parliament. That's where... Yeah, don't make that mistake.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Helmut. Then they go on to say, and I don't know why they love using this word, solemnly. As solemnly pledged by all member states in resolution AHG/resolution 16I, adopted by the Assembly of Heads of State and Government at its first ordinary session in Cairo, Egypt, from 17 to 21 July 1964. Hello, Namibia didn't exist. South Africa didn't want to be part of Africa at the time, because everybody else was having their independences and they were against South Africa. So on a legal base, okay, technically Namibia said, yes, we ascended to that agreement of 1964. Yeah, so that means South Africa the same as well. But in principle, and you know this principle exists also in contract law. If you weren't at the negotiating table, not the other one where you said you are the chow, you know, you're the meal if you were not at the negotiation table, the other principle that exists in legal terms, if you weren't there, you technically didn't agree to terms. Basically, even though you said you agreed, you know, after being a country now, but you didn't know at what level, who were the people, the founders, you didn't know the people personally there at that particular negotiation. So when you write up a statement that says, okay, Helmut, on behalf of you, yes, this agreement was written in 1900, but since you were born in 1990, on behalf of you, we'll just say you also agree. Because that's what it technically says. Because back in 1964, they were funny guys. I discovered this through, what's this guy from New York's name? Zoran Mamdani's father,
yeah.
Mahmoud Mamdani. He knows Mus Museveni personally.
Yeah.
They were
homies.
They were friends basically. But he also knew of what kind of a person and the history of, what's his name? Idi Amin.
Yeah.
Do you know that no one on Africa trusted Idi Amin?
I mean, you keep saying that, and I keep telling you that the people he cooked for trusted him
in the military. It's not that.
What?
It's because he was an informant for the CIA, for the British, and for the Israelis.
So, wait, they put him in power?
Especially the British.
Look, I think after going Suharto in Indonesia, and you have all the Shah of Iran and all those things, and all those one thing
and John
that,
Bolton's claim and John Bolton's confession of we do regime change.
One thing I've come to learn is that wherever there is a dictator, someone is benefiting from that dictatorship.
No. Yeah, yes, but it's not just that thinking. It's there was someone who put him there.
Yeah, definitely.
He's there on someone's orders. He's not there as an independent. He didn't act independently.
He did not. And you know one thing about I'm not sure about South Korea though. I'm not sure about
no,
North
South Korea.
No,
South Korea did have a civil war.
I'm not sure about North Korea though.
No, did you know that South Korea had also had a military junta?
When?
Here in the 80s, 70s.
Jeez. No.
And it literally was, guess what? A Napoleon.
Of course.
A general from the army that went like, you know what, guys? I don't like these civilians. How about I put myself
there? Hang on a second. Yeah. I remember that guy. He's the one that ended up, South Korea, you know, South Korea, I think.
And the Americans supported them.
Yeah, the South Korean government, I believe, the South Korean government, I still have to confirm that. The South Korean government, there's this day that they have, a lot of atrocities were basically committed by that leader. And they commemorate that day annually. And something was said by one of these Western countries on that day in reference. Something sarcastic was said on that day, and the South Koreans were not very happy. Wherever there's a dictator, first of all, I like how dictators put on the facade like they're the big guy, they're the boss. No, they're not. They have a boss.
There is a boss.
There is a boss.
There's always a boss.
That's something that imagine how shocked I was when I found out, and this was, this was just about 2-3 years ago when I found out that it was the Americans that basically installed Saddam in power in Iraq so they can use him against Iran.
Yeah. And then they attack him.
And then they blow
him. In 1990 on the first Gulf War because he thought he was safe. And then they attack him again. In 2003, where everyone who doesn't even have internet told him, bro, what weapons are you talking about?
So there were no weapons of mass destruction. They were just telling him that, you know what, we put you in that office, we can get you out of that office, and that's exactly what they did.
Hence the reason why, what's his name? Nelson Mandela says, and there's a clip that literally popped up on social media just before what happened to Iran with the first bombings that happened on 28 February was literally that clip of Nelson Mandela, because Nelson Mandela became palpably angry. You could feel his anger by watching, because the man wanted to shout. He said, there's only one country that doesn't care about your laws, who doesn't care about your governance, doesn't care if you're peaceful or not. They will break all international agreements and laws
to go and get whatever it is that you're after.
To do whatever harm they can do to you. So, yeah. That unfortunately is the fate of the rest of the world, because this makes it like dealing with a precarious character who has something worse than bipolar disorder.
Now, we have 9 minutes, and please, there's a statement that you were reading there.
Oh, that other statement in my fancy English. Uh-huh. So, you obviously did the strongly condemned, because I did the first part ending in 1964. Mm. Now, they then go to paragraph 3, the fully endorse, because you ended at strongly condemn and reject.
Yeah.
We fully endorse the communique of Peace and Security Council of the Peace and Security Council of the African Union, adopted on 6 January 2026 at the ministerial level, condemning and rejecting the unilateral recognition of the so-called, in inverted commas, guys, the so-called Republic of Somaliland by Israel. And the statement by His Excellency Mahmoud Ali Yusuf, chairperson of the commission, issued on 26 December 2025, rejecting any initiative or action aimed at recognizing the northern region of Somalia, which is Somaliland, as an independent entity which runs counter to the fundamental principles of the AU and the UN and the risks, setting a dangerous precedent with far-reaching implications for peace and stability across the continent. Here's another thing. When such language pops up, Helmut.
Read the number 7.
Number 7, okay. The last one. We call upon all member states and international partners to reaffirm Somalia's sovereignty and unity. Reject all illegal acts undermining these principles and stand in solidarity to uphold African unity.
Technically, Somaliland is not a member. So, Israel is not a member, so now. The thing is, Mark Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada's speech at the World Economic Forum, that was him speaking facts, basically pointing out the harsh reality about the world of politics none of us like to talk about.
Yeah, if because the AU is playing a narrative game.
Exactly. Now, the most powerful point of that speech was, international law can only protect you up to a certain level.
Yeah.
That's it. We don't like to talk about that.
Yeah.
But that is actually the reality of the world of politics. And Africa wants to play the narrative game. The world doesn't play by those roles. They do when it's convenient.
Mm.
Outside of that, you know, you may not like McKinney, but the point, and I mean, that speech was very, very, very powerful. And also in that speech, he referenced the 2024 Munich Security Conference point that was made by the then Secretary, you know, Secretary of State under Biden, Anthony Blinken.
Mm.
In the world of politics, if you are not at the table, you are on the menu. We have been on the menu since the transatlantic slavery.
Yeah.
Now, and we think we can negotiate our way to the table. If you ask me, no, that's not going to work. Look, we have the resources that's needed for a lot of countries.
Yeah.
So a lot of those countries that need these resources to run their industries and therefore their economies will come and get to these resources.
Yeah.
Some of them will ask. Some of them won't. Now, you can say no to those who will ask. What are you going to do to those who will just bulldoze through? If you don't have an army, you can't defend yourself. You'll only be able to say no to those that will come asking.
Mm.
You can't say no to someone who is coming, who is showing up with a gun.
Definitely.
Otherwise, you'll just be there in the corner like my Timbukushu teacher always used to tell us a very, you know, funny story. You know, he went to school during apartheid and he said, you know, this was a time when your teachers stormed into the class with a gun and, being taught in Afrikaans, and he forgot his homework. So the only word he could remember, he was supposed to do a presentation in front of the class.
An oral.
They
had to do their orals, yeah.
Yeah, it was in Afrikaans. The only word he could remember was ekre. So he kept repeating.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I know. Yeah, poor guy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So he kept going ekre, ekre, ekre. Now, at this point, you know, you can imagine the teacher going, J.K.R. Vat, Menir.
Vat's okay. Vat, great. But anyway, before we continue, let's quickly take a live read. Vavitcha University announces the NQA approval for expansion of scope. Vavitcha University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority, NQA Council, has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF-registered qualifications that are offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. These include the Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. So... Yeah.
We condemn, strongly condemn and reject in February. And look, what's going on here is like having that kid that you yell at, I do not ever want to see you with the, yelling is mostly done to girls. For some reason, as guys who have a get out of jail free card when it comes to, you know, to relationships. I do not ever want to see you with that boy again. And the next day they show up.
I don't know what you're talking about, Herbert, because the yelling was usually about the friends that I had. I don't want to see you hanging with those friends again.
Yeah, like, they are bad influence on you. Oh, mom, but I'm the manager.
But all we are doing is just playing street football. What bad influence is there in street football?
No, when it comes to, 90% of the time, parents that are telling their child to stay away from others because they are bad influence don't know that their child is the CEO of bad influence. My child will never do that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I know that part. I'm laughing now because there's actually such an example that exists. And I was like, hey, you know, is this really my family?
Been there, done that.
No, because he didn't care for rules. You know, you remember the CEO, the referee, the owner of the ball,
yeah.
the manager of both teams. You remember that kind of a guy. So it's a family. It's a family member I have. A homeboy didn't care. You know, a fight would just start there. Even if you're the owner of the ball, a fight would start there. And I'm like, it's here. Am I family of this guy? And you're just like, what's going on here? And now the worst part is there were a whole bunch of kids of the neighborhood in my street playing street football. And you're like, you know, the aim is to have to enjoy. The aim is not here to throw fistic out and just throw knuckles around. So, yeah.
So, condemnations were done in February, but that relationship that was condemned by the AU is still ongoing.
Well, that was before 28 February.
That was before,
before democracy was delivered for a 100-day war that supposedly we still have to see said particular MOU, which is Kama being leaked online. Nobody knows if it's the real document or not. Donald Trump is there on international news. Kama sitting right next to Modi, who refuses to speak English. We all know Modi has Hixie English levels, but yeah.
Just decided to go with Hindi.
Because, I mean, yeah.
Get so much more. Get the best for dad this Father's Day at ShopRite. Save big on a wide range of gifts and treats he'll be sure to love, like an 8-piece Wall Home Pro Basic haircutting kit for $179.99 per set. Kalahari Hemsbok Droivors for just $36.99 per 100 grams. Or give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We are 2 minutes into the hour of six. That's, of course, business and economic segment time. So, the whole condemnation and strong-worded rejection is makes a lot of sense on paper. And we got this from Europe, you know. Every time, you know, Russia bombs a place in Ukraine, they go, you know, they write a strongly-worded condemnation. And we adopted that way of solving problems. And I think we...
But at an AU level.
On an AU. Look, we have taken it a little too far because I think, is it Jaragoi Odinga was claimed on the political system of Kenya that the reason why he had a problem with with Jomo Kenyatta's regime or way of doing things was he was just seeing the white bourgeoisie being replaced with a black one. Now I can't stop thinking of that because after every time I read this document, the first thing that comes in my head is that bourgeoisie, we now have a system where you have a bunch of people steal money, send their kids to private school. They come back with fancy English and start reading strongly worded condemnations that carry no water at all.
Or they basically choose to do strongly worded condemnation letters.
Because that's, let's face it, that's all we are able to do.
But you can also just drive to the other person and go ask him, hey, what's goed van jou?
Okay, now, thank you for pointing that. But here's the thing.
I thought we were together.
Okay, the thing is...
Or do what the Somalis do. Start shooting when people have meetings at home.
The African Union can't do that. You know why?
Yeah.
It's because they know the person, the country they'll be going against would be who? Israel.
Yeah.
And Israel is this country that's allowed to break international law. Actually, the U.S. joined Israel into breaking international law.
Actually, the U.S. endorses. The U.S. and the U.K.
The entire West joins it now.
Yeah. Endorses Israel breaking international law.
Yeah. So those, now, a lot of your investors that are keeping your economies running are from that block.
Yeah. The money comes from there.
The money comes from them. You want to do something...
Strongly worded?
That's why I'm telling you, strongly worded is all we can do to show that, you know what...
But it's not even at Israel. This statement, this declaration, is not even directed at Israel. Do you know that?
I'm doing this... it's not directed at Israel.
It just says they're in the air. I don't like this.
They had a little bit of nerves to mention Israel in that declaration.
Because they have to must not describe, because people would have asked, why are you...
Who are you condemning?
Yeah. Why is this declaration here?
This whole visit, the orange juice visit is not going to bring about any change. There's nothing the AU can do because,
orange juice for
the orange juice toast guys are the ones that, that's where your investors are coming from. Let's face it.
Yeah.
And a bunch of this, and a bunch of you in the African Union have properties in the countries of the orange juice guys.
What the hell?
Now we can go.
On that note, guys, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.